Luke 12:13-21. And one out of the multitude said unto him, Teacher, bid my brother divide the inheritance with me. But he said unto him, Man, who made me a judge or a divider over you? And he said unto them, Take heed and keep yourselves from all covetousness, for a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth. And he spake a parable unto them, saying, The ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he reasoned within himself, saying, What shall I do, because I have not where to bestow my fruits? And he said, This will I do. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there I will bestow all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, Thou foolish one, this night is thy soul required of thee, and the things which thou hast prepared, whose shall they be? So is he that layeth up treasure for himself is not rich toward God.
As I mentioned this morning and have frequently, I have wanted to and do from time to time present lessons that are dealing with some of the things the little ones are studying in their class. I know you've been studying about this too. Melissa and Linda, I believe, or no, Carolyn made me a list of some things that they're talking about, so that's real helpful. I appreciate that. And tonight we're going to be talking about this text of this man that God called a fool. And the question is, why was the rich man a fool? Why was he so foolish? Well, the context is established when we note in verse 13 that two brothers came to Jesus fussing about the inheritance. And Jesus questioned, Who made me a judge or a divider among you? One is concerned that the other is going to get a larger inheritance, and they want Jesus to arbitrate or settle the matter between them. But as Jesus tells the parable of this rich man, the lesson is to keep yourselves from all covetousness. That's the lesson. And he uses this parable to help these two brothers and those who might listen to know what it is to be foolish and things that cause us to be so foolish. Notice, if you will, in the text, as we look at verse 16, that the ground of this rich man brought forth plentifully. He had all kinds of grain and goods, but he was not concerned about anybody else but himself. Sometimes we get caught in that trap. All of the things that we possess, we consider them as mine, and nobody else can have them. In Mark's account, or Matthew's account, in the 16th chapter, reading beginning in verse 24, Matthew chapter 16, verse 24, Jesus said, If any man would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. Look carefully at that passage. Can't be selfish and follow the Lord. Let a man deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whosoever would save his life shall lose it, and whosoever shall lose his life for my sake shall find it. For what shall a man be profited if he shall gain the whole world and forfeit or lose his life? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his life? We note that selfishness is an attribute that is displeasing unto the Lord. In Matthew, the 22nd chapter, the Jews came to Jesus with questions that they intended to be entrapment questions. And one asked him, What is the first and the greatest commandment? You're familiar with this. And Jesus said, The first and the greatest commandment is this, Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. Now, beloved, can we have ourselves in first place? No, God has to be first. But he said, The second is like unto it, Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. And we don't have the time this evening to discuss James 1:27 that discusses the attitude we should have toward those who are widows and orphans. Nor do we have time to consider the context of Galatians chapter 6, chapter 5, beginning in verse 15, through chapter 6, verse 10, to note that it takes time to express love and concern for others, both in the physical realm as well as in the spiritual realm, to try to help those who need our help. The judgment day. will find many of us perhaps lost because we forgot about everybody but ourselves. As you turn to the great judgment scene in Matthew, the 25th chapter, in Matthew chapter 25, reading beginning at verse 31, as the judgment scene begins, we notice a division of all that are brought before the Lord. And to those on the right hand, he said in verse 34, "Come ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world." And then in verse 41, to those on the left hand, he said, "Depart from me, ye cursed, into the eternal fire, which is prepared for the devil and his angels." Now, what made the difference? Those who were blessed, told to enter in, asked why. And Jesus said, "I was hungry, and you gave me to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me to drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and ye visited me. I was in prison, and ye came unto me." Now, he emphasizes that inasmuch as you did it unto even these least, you did it to me. Those on the left hand who were told to depart, they asked why. And notice the reading in the text of verse 42. It says, "Because you were adulterers and fornicators and whoremongers," and it was because you were... No, that's not what it says, is it? No, it says, "For I was hungry, and you did not give me to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you took me not in. Naked, and you clothed me not. Sick, and in prison, and ye visited me not. Then shall ye also answer, saying, Lord, when saw we thee in these assortment of conditions, and didn't do anything?" And he said, "In that you did it not unto these least, you didn't do it to me." Now notice, if you will, that these in the judgment were told to depart because they forgot about everybody else. They forgot about... This rich man of our text forgot about others. He wasn't concerned about anyone but himself. Why was he a fool? He was a fool because he thought that joy and happiness could be found in things, in eating and drinking and having a good time. Sometimes we think that way, don't we? I don't know of any better place to illustrate that than to turn to the book of Ecclesiastes and think about King Solomon. In Ecclesiastes chapter 2, in verses 3 through verse 11, we won't read all of that again for sake of time, and it's a familiar text to you. But you'll note that Solomon said, "I made me great parks, and I had streams of water, and I had all kinds of orchards, and all kinds of musical instruments, and all kinds of entertainers, and everything that you could imagine from A to Z as far as culture is concerned." And he said, "None of those things were satisfying." Now that's a loose paraphrase. But they didn't satisfy. And he said, "Then I considered my wisdom. Why was I more wise?" And he said, "One thing happens to the fool, and so will it happen to me. And so was I, or why was I then more wise?" He said, "We all die." And he was angry. He was upset about that. Well, wherein did he find lasting satisfaction? When you come to the end of the book, it says, "Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole of man," the whole duty of man. Everything that man's about is doing what God said, keeping His commandments. Now that will find fulfillment, satisfaction. Therein is happiness. That's the source of real joy. This man of Luke chapter 12 was a fool because he thought that things could satisfy him, and things just don't. They just don't. And we note further that as we consider those in the New Testament that found happiness and joy, when we think about the eunuch, for example, in Acts chapter 8, who went on his way rejoicing, was it because he had a rich uncle somewhere that died? No. It was because he had obeyed the gospel. In Acts chapter 16, when we read about the Philippian jailer that had occasion to rejoice, he and all his house. Why? Because they had obeyed the gospel. They knew what it was to be forgiven. They had understood then the real, genuine source of joy and happiness. Why was the rich man foolish? He forgot about his soul. Notice that all of his concern has to do with temporal things. He considered his grain and his goods. And he said, "Where will I bestow all my grain and my goods? I will tear down my barns, and there I'll build greater barns. And there will I bestow all my grain and my goods." Notice the focus of his attention. It has nothing in the world to do with spiritual things. All he can think about are temporal things. Now often we exchange spiritual things for material things and we think somehow we've gained, and that's just not so. This man forgot about the most important things, and that is his soul. And my friend, the Bible warns over and over, and this is just a sampling of texts that deal with the dangers that are attached to riches. Doesn't say it's sinful to have riches. Doesn't say it's sinful to be rich. But if you'll notice in the text of 1 Timothy chapter 6, 1 Timothy chapter 6, reading beginning at verse 9, he said, "But they that are minded to be rich fall into a temptation and a snare and many foolish and hurtful lusts, such as drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, which some reaching after have been led astray from the faith and have pierced themselves through with many sorrows." Abraham was rich, but he's described as the friend of God. Abraham is cited as an example of faith. You see, being rich was not sinful. It's what one's attitude is toward things that can become sinful. And that was the problem with the fellow we're reading about in Luke chapter 12. God called him a fool. Why? Well, he forgot all about God. He forgot all about God. Turn, if you will, in the Psalms, in Psalms chapter 111. Psalms 111. In the 10th verse of that text, the writer said, "The fear of Jehovah is the beginning of wisdom. A good understanding have all they that do His commandments. His praise endureth forever." The fear of the Lord is the beginning of understanding. Now that's the starting place. But this man forgot all about God. He wasn't concerned about spiritual things at all. You see, the Bible teaches us to put the kingdom of God and His righteousness first. Seek that first. Above all things, all else, seek that first. Now, what about family? We've talked a lot today about family. Family's important, isn't it? But who comes first? God or family? That's a hard one, isn't it? Well, it ought not be hard to just answer the question. The application of that is not always easy. In Matthew, the 10th chapter, in verse 37, Jesus said, "He that loveth father, mother, son, or daughter more than me is not worthy of me." You see, you can't afford not to put God first. But this man, he forgot all about God. He was a fool. You see, whenever our long-range plan, whatever they may be, we have to remember the place of God in them. You've heard the illustration, I've used it a number of times, about the man who was graduating from high school and talking with his grandfather about the great plans he had for college and then for what his career might be when he got out of college. The young man affirmed that his desire would be to gain his degree in law, where he could one day become a lawyer. Well, that's worthy ambition. And his grandfather responded with the expression, "That's fine, son, what then?" He said, "Well, I'd like to one day own my own law firm." "That's fine, son, what then?" "Well, perhaps one day I could be a judge or be seated on the Supreme Court of the United States." "Worthy ambition." "That's fine, son, what then?" And he laughed at his grandfather because he didn't understand, it seemed, that to receive an appointment as a Supreme Court justice would be a lifetime appointment. He said, "Grandfather, I would be there till I died." And his grandfather then asked the question, "That's fine, son, what then?" Now, we plan for everything, often leaving out the most important things. This man had planned for the rest of his life, but he hadn't planned for eternity, like the young man graduating from high school. In the greatest of our plans, God needs to figure into that. I was talking with some of you recently about potential plans toward retirement. And one of the things that you call to mind in some of those conversations is where you might live when you choose to retire. And then plans that you might make relative to what you would do during that time. Someone made the comment that when we make plans toward retirement, how many of us consider the condition of the church in the location where we might consider retiring as the first and primary of our plans? Now that needs to be in there, doesn't it? Right at the top. But this man didn't concern himself with such things. You see, he was a fool. What else had he forgotten about? He had forgotten about the fact that he, as we said this morning, did not have a perpetual lease on life. He didn't figure into the equation that he would die. When he was thinking of his grain and his goods, he said, "You have much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry." I find it an interesting contrast when God said unto him, "Thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee." You see, this man is making plans for many years. The irony is he had made plans for that night. We make plans for way down the road somewhere. But what if tonight should terminate our travels? You see, perhaps we haven't made the necessary plans for this day. We mentioned Hebrews 7 or 9:27 this morning. "It is appointed unto men once to die, and after this cometh judgment. The living know they shall die," Ecclesiastes 9. Death is something that is. It happens. Tomorrow may never be. We're not promised tomorrow. Now what about today? This man wasn't concerned about that. He was concerned about the many years. But you read no mention in the text of the judgment. The man had evidently given no consideration for any kind of spiritual thing. He had not thought about the judgment. But the judgment is described as an appointment. You'll note in Acts the 17th chapter and in verses 30 and 31. Acts chapter 17, verses 30 and 31. "Paul in Athens said the times of ignorance therefore God overlooked, but now he commandeth men that they should all everywhere repent, inasmuch as he hath appointed a day in which he will judge the world in righteousness by the man whom he hath ordained, whereof he hath given assurance unto all men, in that he hath raised him from the dead." There's going to be a day of accounting, a day of judgment. This man hadn't thought about that. Give that no consideration at all. Made no preparation to that end. He'd forgotten about that. Now the judgment is based upon the things done in the body, Paul said, whether they be good or bad. The things that we say will be judged by every word that passes from our lips. Even the secret things, the thoughts and the intents of the heart will be a matter of the judgment, as we see in Romans chapter 2. Well, this man hadn't given any of that consideration. And so he was going to face the judgment without ever thinking about those things. I want you to consider just for the moment, where does that put you in this equation? There may be one or more in the audience tonight that needs to think about the condition of our souls. This man forgot about everybody but himself. He forgot about the source of real joy. Didn't give any consideration to spiritual things such as his soul, God, the fact that he would die and face God in judgment. Now, God called that man a fool. Would you? Would you think a man like that's a fool? Now, if that's the description of a fool, there are a whole lot of fools walking around, aren't there? Don't be one tonight. You see, the rich man and all that live like him are lost. Now, that's the point in the lesson that Jesus is teaching these two brothers. You're fighting about temporal things. The man who is a fool is the man who places so much emphasis upon those things and forgets about his soul. In verse 21, the writer says, "So is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." What do you consider of genuine value? Material things? Or spiritual things? Brother Dennis Ross, when he was preaching over at Santa Barbara, made an interesting comment to me based on 2 Corinthians chapter 4, beginning in verse 16, on into chapter 5, when Paul talked about seeing those things that are not seen. He said, "For the things that are seen are temporal. The things that are not seen are eternal." Brother Dennis simply made the observation, if you can see it, it won't last. That's right. If you can see it, it won't last. Now, what's your point of emphasis tonight? Would it be your desire to obey the Lord and be right with Him tonight? You need to obey the gospel. All things are ready. We'll baptize you into Christ tonight. If you're a believer who's determined to turn from the things that are wrong, motivated by godly sorrow, the Bible calls that repentance. Would you tonight confess your faith and be baptized? Maybe you've obeyed the gospel, but there are changes that you need to make, some things you need to correct. Can we help you tonight? Would you make that known while together we stand and while we sing this song?